start over here, Parshas Truma. We're going to speak about the pasuk toward the beginning of the Parsha. Last year we talked about the Tolas Shani, which is one of the dyes that they use to dye the wool red. So this year we're going to go into the next line. But Oros Elam Adamna says in Parakal Pei Pasuk A, but there were skins of the red rams, Oros Tachoshim Ba'atei Shitim. Then you have the Oros, the skins of the Tachash, and the Atei Shitim, and the Acacia wood as well. So the question is, what were these Tachoshim? What was the Tachash that we're referring to that the skins were used in the Mishkan itself? So Rashi tells us the Tachash was a Chaya that lived at that time, it existed at that time. Ibn Ezra says it was well known that people knew what the Tachash was, even though we no longer know what it is now, but it was something that was well known. In fact, in Yechezkel, Paratez Zayim Pasuk Yud, when talking about what God did for the Jews in the Midbar, he says, "Ba'an Aucho Tachash," that it was able to give you shoes made from a Tachash. Seemingly, they used these skins as shoes when they were in the Midbar, which would lead one to believe that it was a common animal. If they made shoes out of it, and people often used it for shoes, you'd think that it was a common animal that people knew about. The other Rishonim, the Rashbam, the Sforno, the Chizkuni, the other Rishonim, the Bali Tosfos, they all ignore what this animal could be. The simple translation, according to them, is just Tachash. There's nothing else. No other information is given from any of the Rishonim describing the animal, understanding what the animal could be, nothing. All we have is this Rashi and the Ibn Ezra referring to the fact that it was an animal, etc., and something like that. The source for Rashi is the Gemara Shabbos, Daf Kof Chet, Amud Aleph and Amud Beis. The Gemara tells us it was a Bria Bifnei Atzmahu. It was a creature on its own. It was not like anything else. The Gemara gets into a discussion if it's a Chaya or a Behema. Was it a Chaya or a Behema itself? And it concludes that it's a Chaya, but not conclusive. It's not automatic that it's a Chaya. It's a bit of a Kasha. It was a Bria Bifnei Atzmahu. It was given to Moshe Rabbeinu at that time, and after it was Nignas, it was Gunuz, meaning hidden away, it no longer lived in that area of that time. The beauty of its coat was beautiful. It looked tremendous. It looked as if it was painted on the same way that they have by certain animals nowadays. And then it adds another description. The Tachash had a horn in the middle of its forehead, which is not indicated by the pasuk itself. But nonetheless, it's said by the Gemara that there was a horn in the middle of its forehead. And Chazal concluded from that it must be a kosher animal. Because the only other animal that we know that has a horn in the middle of its forehead is the shore that Adam Rishon brought as a korban. It's brought down also in the Gemara in Shabbos and the Gemara in Chulin. Since they say that animal was the first korban, and that animal had one horn in the middle of its forehead and was kosher, the assumption that the Gemara gives is that any animal that has a horn in the middle of its forehead must be kosher. Now, nonetheless, that is the way that the Gemara darshans it over there. I'm not getting into high, obviously, there are Rishonim there. I'm saying it simplistically. But regardless, that's what the Gemara ends up staying over there. Now, it says from there that it should be kosher in order to use it in the Mishkan, since we darshan lamantia Torah Hashem b'ficha, it's got to be mutter b'ficha. In other words, the tefillin straps that you have and the tefillin boxes that are made from cow skin, right? Cow skin that we put on top of our heads, it's hardened obviously here and a little bit softer on the straps, have to be from a kosher cow. It shouldn't be from a cow that's treif, shouldn't be from a cow that's an avela. It should be a cow that's kosher, that was shechted properly. They take the skin and they turn it into the leather boxes, leather straps that we have for tefillin. We get that from the pasuk l'mantia Torah Hashem b'ficha. The Torah of Hashem should apply to b'ficha. It should be something that you can eat, something you can put in your mouth. A sefer Torah can be written on skin only of a kosher animal, not on something different. And so too over here, when it refers to something used for the Mishkan, says the Gemara, it's likely that we're using something that's going to be kosher, something that would be mutter b'ficha. Now, that's not automatic. Last year we discussed the Tolas Shani. The Tolas Shani were these berries that had these bugs inside them, worms inside them. They dried them out and then crushed them and they used them in the Mishkan. That certainly is not kosher, although in theory it is, if it's not a berry or whatever, we can get around it. But regardless, it seems that you're using not kosher creatures. Meshi, which is silk that comes obviously from a bug, right, was used in the creation of the Beis HaMikdash. The Rabbeinu Bachaya talks about that. So Kashi is how that goes. But nonetheless, that's not a discussion for today. The assumption of the Gemara is that it's a kosher animal, it's got one horn in the middle of its forehead, It only lived during that time, according to the Gemara, given over to Moshe Rabbeinu, or at least it was there at that time, and that's that. Yerushalmi Shabbos, same Gemara, but in the Yerushalmi instead of the Bavli, and Beis Gimel brings down three opinions. Rabbi Yehuda says it is a ram skin that is colored to look like a tachash, which is an animal that isn't kosher, but very beautiful. Meaning, the tachash is a non-kosher creature. Non-kosher creature. But there was a skin that was given the colors of the tachash. Whatever the tachash is, which is this non-kosher creature, they took a kosher animal and dyed the skin that color. Rabbi Nechemya calls the color of the ram skin galketinun. Both of them are referring to, according to the Korban Eidah, which is one of the Perushim on the Yerushalmi, it refers to a type of animal, not kosher, whatever it is. The Mustafa Aruch, this is not the Aruch itself, but somebody that wrote on it, says it refers to a type of weasel, that this animal was referring to over here when it says galketinun is a type of weasel, but we'll get to that as we go later on. The Rabbanan are the ones that say like our Gemara. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Chami are the ones that are saying it's like a goat skin or a sheep skin that was dyed, but the Rabbanan say like our Gemara. It's a kosher chaya that lives, or possibly was created, in the wilderness and was ganuz afterward. And then Rabbi Yehuda comes around and calls it a keresh. A keresh is an animal that is mentioned two other places in Shas. One of them is Chulin Daf Nun Tes. It's very likely referring to a giraffe. It talks about the keresh as being this big, huge animal that's 12 amos tall or 16 amos tall. It might be a bit of an exaggeration. Giraffes can be, as we know, up to 18 feet tall. But nonetheless, it makes sense that it would have been that long if that's the keresh that that's referring to over here. Regardless, that's what Rabbi Avin says. That's what we have from the Yerushalmi. Three different opinions, and then Rabbi Avin adding on that it's the keresh. In the Medrash Tanhuma, Rabbi Yehuda, the same Rabbi Yehuda as in the Yerushalmi, but a little bit different, he says like the Rabbanan. It has a horn on its forehead, and it had six colors on its skin. Six different colors on its skin itself. Rabbi Nechemya says, Maisa Nisim. It was miraculous, similar to Rabbi Meir in the Gemara on Shabbos. It didn't make any sense that it was there, and it was ganuz afterward. It was hidden afterward, says Rabbi Nechemya. It's the same review to Rabbi Nechemya, but saying two very different things in the Yerushalmi from the Medrash Tanhuma. Rabbi Chaim Knievsky says the miracle behind the Takash was not how it got there, but its size. The Takash, just to explain, on top of the Mishkan itself, the skins were 28 by 4 amos. 28 by 4 amos. There were 10 yerios ezim that they put on top of the Mishkan. They were attached to one another, sewed together. So you had 28 that went this way over the Mishkan, and then 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4 that went over the Mishkan and hung down over the side. The front was open, but the whole thing went down this way and went over this way. Each skin was 28 by 4 amos. Now, just sound. 28 amos is give or take almost 40 feet. 40 feet long. To say that there was a goat that was 40 feet long is nearly impossible, which makes it likely that the goats either, again, we're dealing with miracles, so perhaps HaKadosh Baruch Hu created goats that were absolutely huge, that were 30 feet long, 40 feet long, and they took that skin and they put it on top, and there was just 10 of them. It's possible that that's there. Otherwise, you could say that there was tremendous chokmah involved, in which they made it look like it was one big skin that was 28 by 4. I'm not going
to...
I'm sorry?
It's
only because the way that it's described by the Chumash is that it's 28 by 4 and then sewed on to the next 28 by 4. It sounds like the first 28 by 4 is not sewn together. It could be it is.
Right, as long as 28 by 4 you're going to find a square. I mean,
that is a square.
A rectangle.
Yeah, a rectangle.
A shape.
Yeah.
Means that it was cut.
Correct. Which means it would have to be bigger.
Or you could say that it was sewn into like one.
Again,
one.
If the others ones are sewed and it says clearly that they were sewn, it would be likely that this one would have been told if it was sewn together, not just one skin. But again, if we're dealing with miracles, it's a miracle. If we're not dealing with a miracle, right, and then it could be. It could be that it was sewn together. There's nothing against that, right? It just seems like that. But Rav Chaim Kansky says straight out that was the miracle. That these animals were 30 amos large, these tachashim. It's not that a tachash doesn't exist, it's that they weren't this large, to have it be huge, a 45 foot creature. We're talking almost as big as an elephant, if not the size of an elephant, to make it that big. That was the miracle, says Rav Chaim Kanievsky, that it was absolutely huge. Now, that's that regarding the description in the Gemaras that talk about it. There are no other Gemaras that talk about the Tatash in that way. That's it. That Gemara Shabbos, the Yerushalmi and the Medrash Tanchuma, that speak about what the Tatash was. What's up?
Would Rav Chaim Kanievsky's thing work with the same Shabbos thing that was addressed? In terms of surface area.
It's possible. Yeah. We'll get to it. It's possible. It's definitely possible. But I'm just saying, a giraffe is 18 feet.
Yeah.
45 feet is... Maybe if you go from one side to the other. I hear what you're saying. Yeah, it's possible. We'll get to it. Targum Onkelos and Yonasim and Uziel both call it one word. They call it Sasguna. Samach, Samach, Gimel, Vav, Nun, Aleph. Sasguna. That's what they end up calling it. Now, Rashi tells us that this word, Sasguna, is a combination of two words. The word sus, as in happy, and gavna, which is color. Sus in Hebrew is happy. Gavna in Aramaic is a color. Okay, that it was happy about its colors. That it loved its colors, it loved showing it off, and it had a beautiful skin that everybody wanted to see. That's the way that Rashi tells it, and that's the way that they understand that targum of Onkelos and Yonasim and Uziel. That Seder L'Derech has no idea what he's talking about. Why in the world would you have a Hebrew and an Aramaic word together in an Aramaic translation of the Chumash? It makes no sense. The word sus cannot be Hebrew. Sasguna could not be that way. Why wouldn't you say that Sasguna, says the Seder L'Derech, is just the name for the Hebrew Tachash? Hebrew Tachash. Aramaic, it's Sasguna. Rashi has to darshan that it's referring to a sus begavna. What does that mean? Why would Rashi have to darshan that? That doesn't make any sense. So he doesn't like that whatsoever. He says maybe the word instead should be the word sheish. Sheish as in six, which is a Hebrew and Aramaic word, shisha, you would say, right? Which would be over there. I had the same kasha on the Seder L'Derech, I don't know. But the Seder L'Derech says that sheish would make more sense, and gavna would be the colors, and that explains the Medrash Tanchuma, sheish gavna, that there were six colors on the tachash. Not referring to sus gavna, but it's sheish gavna. And he says, I don't have any problem with interchanging a shin and a samach, even though obviously the Targum uses samach samach. Gimel Vav Nun Aleph. He said, I don't have a problem with darshaning Samach the Shin. The Zashas Rats is what they're called. The different letters that can be connected with one another. He says, I don't have a problem with that, but I feel it's like that. It doesn't explain Rashi, but maybe it can explain the Targum. And in that sense, Tachash is the same gematria as Shesh Gavonim. It happens to be 708 off by 1, 709. But that's brought down by the Rabbeinu Ephraim, that Shesh Gavonim. So maybe that's another idea behind it. Who was before? Ellie, you had a question. What's up?
Is there any connection between the Tachash and the coat from
Yosef? The coat from Yosef? Not that we know of. You know, the Technicolor dream coat? Not that we know of. Not that we know of. It's possible. It's very possible. We have no translation as to what that coat was, aside from maybe the Nachash's skin, according to the Seder Adoros, what that coat would have been made out of. Maybe that's a shirt for next year. But regardless, there's no real idea. But not that we know of. We don't have any real connection to the Tachash. Now, I found a Yalkut Teimani. Yalkut Teimani was a medrash that came from Yemen that only a person like Rav Nachman Kasher went through, because he's a brilliant genius and he goes through everything. And he brought down that a tachash has a segula to it, that anybody who saw the tachash and the beauty of the tachash was so wowed by how it looked, by the beauty of such a creature, that they couldn't stop smiling. It gets rid of your sadness. Looking at the tachash causes a person to be sus, to be happy, yaguna. Instead of gavna as in the colors, it's yagon. The sadness goes away. You're happy instead of sad. That's what we learn from the word sasguna, that it's really happy about that. It's still the same problem that Seder L'Derech had. Sus is a Hebrew word, and that's, you're using that for Aramaic. But regardless, that's how he says, the Al-Qsiwani says that. The Torah Shlema also brings down that sus is a type of worm. I'll give a dollar to anybody who knows where that comes from. It's a really weird Gemara in Shabbos that says that you're chayef writing two letters in a row, only certain letters, and one of them is sus, right? And one of them, there's chach, sus, I forgot what the other ones are. You'd have to go through. And it refers to all these different types of worms. A sus is a type of worm, which would be unbelievable, type of worm which is very colorful and eye-catching. And this animal looked like that worm. I put on the back, if you look on the back of your sheets, you're going to see, I'm sorry that I don't have enough for everybody over here, the top three are caterpillars. I don't know if you've seen some of the caterpillars out there. The specific one that I have over there, the one that's right in the middle over there, that's a caterpillar. That really exists. That is an absolute caterpillar. There are caterpillars that are the most beautiful things that you could possibly find. It's the reason why I did it in color. So yeah, you can take my wallet for that one. But this 100%, this is the idea behind what it could be. There were worms. In their eyes, this is a worm. Caterpillars that were so beautiful, and that Tahash looked like one of these. You want to check them up, what these things look like. There are some caterpillars that are literally, you can't believe they exist. And I'm sure some of them are fakes, right? But there's some that you look at, you're just, I can't understand this. I can't understand that such a thing exists. That middle one.
Doesn't make sense.
I'm sorry?
Doesn't it have to be kosher?
Well, yeah, the Tahash would be, but it was a caterpillar that it looked like. That's what it means. In other words, that's what it was. So if anybody says such a creature can't exist, it certainly could exist. It's just rare. Also, as a side note, if you've ever seen certain types of sea slugs, if you've ever gone to like a saltwater fish store, and you go to a place where they sell things that are way more than my annual salary, and you go inside there, and you look at some of their stuff, there are some sea slugs, there are some sea cucumbers out there that don't make any sense. They literally don't make any sense. The colors are beyond unbelievable. Beyond unbelievable. They look like that thing over there. That's, I think, the idea that the Gemara is trying, that the Torah Shlem is trying to say, sus gavno, that it looked like the colors of that worm. That's the idea behind it. Now, the Maral Diskin, the Chanukah Seterah, that's the Rebbe Reb Heschel, that's the Rebbe of the Shach, and Rebbe Yaakov Kamenetsky have another issue altogether. Rashi says it only existed at that moment, it had many colors, and therefore the Targum is sas guno. What in the world is the connection between all these facts that it only existed at that moment, etc.? So he said, there's a simple problem here. If this animal only existed when the Jews were in the Midbar, why is there an Aramaic word for it? Brilliant, right? There shouldn't be a word. You can't have a word for something that only existed for a couple hours. There wouldn't be a word for it. How could there be a word for it? It must be, says Rashi, that it's not the other name of a Tahash. There is no Tahash in Aramaic. It doesn't exist because there was no Tahash at the time when the Aramaic language was around. The only time that it was is at this time in the Midbar. So what must Asguna mean? It must be a description of the animal. A description. Whether it's Sheish Gavna, the six colors, or like a worm, or happy about its colors, whatever you're going to translate it as. Nonetheless, it's got to be that Sasguna is not a name, but a description, a translation. That's how they understand it. If you look at the Maral Diskin, the Maral Diskin has two ways of understanding that. That's one way to be able to go through it. And Mizrahi asks another question. Mizrahi goes on and asks on Rashi, he says, how could it be that the Tahash was only there to use in the Mishkan if Yechezkel already said they made shoes out of it? If they made shoes out of it, then clearly it wasn't there just for the Mishkan. It was there for them to use during the 40 years in the Midbar. That's how they got their shoes. So what does that mean exactly? The answer is, there's got to be two types of Tahash. There is the common Tomei Tahash, the Tahash which is a Tomei animal, very colorful and very beautiful, that they used for shoes, which everybody knew about. And then there was a kosher Tahash that looked like the not kosher Tahash, but it was also a beautiful creature, but that kosher Tahash only was during that time, and that's that. According to Rashi, that's how you'd have to answer it up, and that's that. What's up?
I thought that their clothes didn't wear out in the...
And the shoes, right?
Therefore, you'd only need to pass us around for just a minute to make everybody's shoes.
I don't have an answer for that. It's possible that they didn't bring shoes out of Mitzrayim, and they needed shoes when they first came out. One pair. Yeah, one pair. But either way,
that's a lot of animals.
Yeah, you got 3 million people. 3 million people, that's a lot of stuff. How are you going to do that? It's a good question. It's a good question. But regardless, it's there. The Mizrahi calls it a Tla Ilan. Tla Ilan literally means to hang from a tree, although it's written with an aleph. Now, there's a mistake in the Mizrahi. If you actually look up the Mizrahi, it's written as Kla Ilan. Kuf Lamed Aleph Ilan. That is a mistake. Kla Ilan is the type of blue dye that is mistaken for Tchelis quite often. They call it, in the Gemara, they say, you better not dye your tzitzis with Kla Ilan. So when the Mizrahi says, and he calls it, it's the Kla Ilan, it's a mistake. He means Tla Ilan. Tuf Lamed Aleph Ilan. And that's likely what it's referring to over here. And he says that was very common. Now, what is a Tla Ilan? If you look in the back of your sheet again, on page 4, you're going to see the genet over here. A spotted genet on the left-hand side, right over here on the left-hand side over there. The spotted genet is a weasel-like, remember that shot the Musavar gave in the Yerushalmi, a weasel-like, cat-like creature. It is officially not a mustelid, but it is officially not a cat, a feline either. It's right in the middle. This is a genet. It's in the kibbit family. I'm sure that helps everybody. right? And because of that, there's a bunch of different ones, and they do live in the area around. Now, they are beautiful creatures. If you look at it, it's got a little bit of yellow, a little bit of brown, a little bit of black, a little bit of white, and maybe a stickle orange if you find a really good-looking one, right? They are out there. They do sell for $1,400 on the market if you want to get a little one to get to. You found that for me before. They are absolutely beautiful creatures, but it looks like a cat, and they probably smell a lot because all mustelid smell. So either way, regardless, that's that. The other choice of what it could be, what they quoted as an ermine. The ermine is right over here. This is really actually a lease ermine and not an actual ermine itself. There are two different types. They look white in the winter. They turn brown and white in the summer. Sometimes they have a bluish coat. The problem with both of them are it's not the prettiest of creatures. I guess the genet does look a little bit better than the actual, the what's it called itself, the little ermine. But regardless, that's what it refers to when we refer to such things. It's likely that that's what the Mizrahi is referring to when he says Tla'ilan. By the way, as a side note, the genet is known as the hanging cat. The hanging cat in Arabic. I found that in Rabbi Slifkin's book, A Mysterious... not the other one. The one that's not in Karen. it didn't get in Karen because he wrote it afterward. It was good. It was a smart move. It's... what's the book? It's...
The same book.
Yeah, it's the same book. You added on. Oh, Sacred Monsters or something like that. Yeah. Right. Sacred Monsters. No, Mysterious Creatures is the one that was knocked out because whatever. I don't know. I'm not into that stuff. Binyamin knows that I'm not into that stuff. So regardless, that's that. The Chassam Sofer says that even though we always try to use Lashon Naki, so we try to always say that. In fact, there's a Gemara Pesachim. You guys might remember this from the first Parak Pesachim, where two Talmidim were standing there, and one guy said, oh, that reminds me of a goat. And the other guy said, oh, that reminds me of a pig. And he said, that guy is not going to be a Talmud Chacham because you mentioned a pig. So how could you compare it to a not kosher creature? A tacha is a not kosher creature. How could you do that? Says the Chassam Sofer, no, it depends. Obviously, we compare things to a not kosher creature. What's the first sif in Shulchan Aruch Chaim? Anybody know? How does a person have to get up in the morning? Gaber Kari, get up like a lion, right? Obviously, we all know, not only Rutz Kitzvi, it's Kal Kanesher, it's not a kosher creature. Oz Kanomer, Gibor Kari, we obviously compare ourselves to good creatures. You can compare yourself in a good way, in good midos. You compare to non-kosher creatures, and therefore the genic could be used, or this toyun could be used to compare to something good. The problem is when you just say randomly, oh man, that reminds me of a pig, that's not a good thing, right? That's not a good thing. But to say it in that way, that should be perfectly fine, that's going to be there. Okay, another answer that we give as to how the Tachash was going to be able to use by Yechezkel, if it only existed for the Mishkan, it only existed at that time, is another obvious one. The Gurari says it only existed at that time means it only existed for the 40 years they were in the desert. This whole Tachash was there for the Mishkan and for the next 39 years after that. For 40 years they had the Tachash and no longer after that. The whole time was called Lefisha. Okay, and that's that. He says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't have just made 10 tachashim and that was it. It's got to be that there was a huge herd that followed them throughout the Midbar and they made shoes out of them. They made shoes out of these tachashim. Right? That's the idea behind it. Now the problem is, the Medrash Tanhuma quotes Rabbi Nechemya that it was Maisa Nisim. Maisa Nisim sounds like it was a Maisa Nisim for that hour. Lefis Sha'ah. He translates it as literal. But the Gurari says, come on. Lefis Sha'ah doesn't mean for an hour. It means for a certain amount of time. A certain amount of time is 40 years. Lefis Sha'ah is 40 years. That's how the Gurari he puts it, that's how we understand it. There is a proof for the Gurari over the Mizrahi. It's a Gemara. The Gemara in Yevamos Kuf Beis says that shoes being used for chalitza, everybody knows what chalitza is? Right? Instead of yibum, yibum is when you marry a lady, that's your brother-in-law's ex-wife. Your brother-in-law passes away, you marry her, if she doesn't have any children, etc. Chalitza, I'm sorry?
Brother.
I said brother-in-law, didn't I? Yeah. Brother's wife, I meant sister-in-law. We'll put it together. Okay, again. Your brother passes away, he has a wife, he doesn't have any children, you do yibum on that girl. If you can't do yibum for whatever reason, then you can get into chalitza. Chalitza is when you take off the shoe, you spit, you do the whole process of reading the psukim, etc. That's chalitza. There are certain types of shoes that can be used. And the Gemara Darshans, it's a drush in the Gemara over there, that perhaps the shoes being used for chalitza must be kosher. It's possible that it has to be kosher. Why? Because the word na'al is used by the takash. Va'an alcha takash. So we see that a na'al cow, a shoe, must be kosher like the tafash. That's how the Gemara darshins. And the Gemara rejects it. The Gemara says, no, you can make it out of any leather. Any leather is perfectly fine to make the nal out of. You can make the shoe out of absolutely anything. There are Rishonim that argue with that Rabbeinu Tam. That's the Rabbeinu Tam's translation that goes through. But the Rabbeinu Tam is machmir. At the end of the day, he paskins that we do hold that you need kosher shoes for chalitza. The shoes must be made out of kosher leather, not out of anything else. So if that's true, then think about that for a second. That means that the shoes were made out of a kosher animal. According to Mizrahi, which animal was used to make the shoes? The not kosher animal. There was the kosher takash used for the Mishkan. And the not kosher takash was used for the shoes. But according to the Gemara, the way the Rabbeinu Tam's learning, it was clearly the kosher animal that was used for the shoes. So according to that, it seems like the Mizrahi is incorrect in the fact that he's arguing with Rabbeinu Tam, or arguing at least in seemingly a shot in the Gemara. So that would be a bit of a raya for the Gur Aryeh itself. Okay, there are other answers that are brought down. There's the Be'er HaTorah that's here. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky brings down every year. He says it's all Malitza of Alma. It's not literal. It's not literal that they made shoes out of tchoshim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying, I gave you everything you needed. I gave you shoes. I gave you tchoshim. That's not what he's saying. He's not saying that I made you shoes out of tachash skin. They didn't use the tachash skin for it. That's how Rabbi Yaakov understands the idea, entire idea behind it. Okay. How do we know that it's gonos? How do we know this animal is no longer around with us nowadays? So the Gur Aryeh says, because it's not listed in our list of kosher animals. We have a list of 10 kosher mammals, the animals that are kosher for us, and it lists them all through. The 3 domestic ones, the 7 wild ones, and it doesn't list the tachash. Since it doesn't list the tachash, it must not be kosher. That's the Gur Aryeh's conclusion. That's his idea behind it. But the Maral Diskin isn't bothered by that. The Maral Diskin looks at, the masculine David is not bothered by that. The Maskul of David said it's a bria b'fnei atzma. It didn't fit the categories of kosher animals that you put over there. It's its own creature, so we didn't mention it over there. That's the idea behind it, and that's the idea. The Be'er HaTorah has something on this, and etc. We don't need anything. To me, it sounds like, I think something's so obvious. And the unfortunate part is that although I found something in the Chassam Sofer that says like this, I didn't find it exactly. I just find it shocking. I think we're understanding, the understanding of the Gemara is a little bit off. I'm just not so sure how they understood this. Everybody's quoting the Gemara. It says it existed with Yishaw and then it was Nignas. It existed with Yishaw. It doesn't mean that it was Mamish created at that moment. We have a Pasuk of Mishlei, Ein Kol Bria Tachas HaShemesh. You can't have a brand new existence, something under the sun. Everything was created during the Sheshes Mei Bereishis, and then it was brought in, the Pasuk in Kohelis, I'm sorry. So it was there. Enkel Kodesh Tachas HaShemesh. So it wasn't created, it already existed. So my idea is that what happened was, and I have to say lav dafka on the word bara in the Yerushalmi, but the idea is that this creature existed elsewhere. It just didn't live in the Midbar. And with the Yishaw, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it available to the Jews in the middle of the Midbar. Somehow a herd of these animals found their way to the middle of the Midbar, and then there were gunus after that, meaning once they used them all, they weren't there anymore. The animals still exist in another part of the world, they just don't exist in that space anymore. I think that's the most obvious way of looking at it. It's not that they were created all of a sudden and then they were just disappeared into thin air. It's that they lived elsewhere, they were brought from the forest of Thailand by some crazy storm, and it brought it in right to the Midbar. It came right in front of them, and when they used it up, they were gone from that area. I think that's the most pushed idea to go in, which means that this animal does exist, it just doesn't exist there. It just doesn't exist in that area right around there. Now, Tachash had many colors. With Sherbach, now we're getting into the Ramazim of the Tachash. Rav Moshe Sherbach says, this refers to the many different paths to one's Avodas Hashem. The 6 colors represented 6 different aspects of how a Jew can find their way close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And no one's going to find it the same way. The way that I'm going to look at HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the way that I understand certain things, is certainly not the way that everybody understands it. They should, but it's not the way that everybody understands it. And I get that. Which means, at the end of the day, that each color represented a different derech. There's no stira between them. They all work together, and that's the beauty, he says, of Am Yisrael. That's the beauty of Klal Yisrael. They can work together, get their different differences together, and when put together, it forms a very beautiful coat. That's the concept of how it should be together. Maybe that was the idea. That's so funny, Ellie, because I just thought of this now that you said it. Maybe that's the pshat behind Bixonis possum. If Bixonis possum was all the different colors, maybe there were all the different colors of the different shvatim and what they stood for and how they learned, and putting those colors together by Yosef, who was supposed to be the king, that was the idea of putting them together to make a beautiful coat of everyone's derech together. Maybe that's the pshat. Now you said that, Ellie, that makes sense. No, the same idea.
And,
I'm sorry?
Wasn't that Kororia by Noach and Adam and
Yeah, the same thing. Yeah, meaning the same thing, that the drachen that people had in life were represented by the colors of this code, right? And then eventually went to Klal Yisrael themselves. Maybe that's the idea behind it. And therefore, maybe when you put the, I don't want to, you know, the stripes of Jews that work together, right, there is a beauty that's unmatched. I think the Sternbach saying this, remember, he was the Rav in South Africa, dealing with many different types of Jews. It's like traditional Jews, trying to work things together, trying to make things work out. I mean, a place like South Africa, that's the place where you have that whole Shabbos, you know, where you can have that real Shabbos project and get everybody together. And it hasn't worked as well in America, but in South Africa, they were able to do it. They were able to get people to keep Shabbos. They have that traditionalism where everybody has a different derech, but they're working together for one common goal. I think that's the idea behind it. Simcha Rappaport of Lublin asks that in Chulin Daf Samach, we say that all animals were created litzivyonam. Litzivyonam. And Rashi says that means that every animal chose its surah, its colors, and what it wanted to be like. If so, why would this animal be any happier about its colors than anything else? All animals are happy about their colors. They're happy that they chose it. Must be that this Tachash was not really around at Maisa Bereishis. He says it was created at that moment in time. And the idea behind it, says Rav Simcha Rappaport, is that it was created right then, and it was so happy that it got the most beautiful colors in the world as a remez to show Klal Yisrael what they needed to do to join a Kadosh Baruch Hu and to bring themselves up. Only the Tachash was able to be this way, and that's why it loved its color so much, more than anybody else ever did. Now, the Yalkut Ruveni says, if you take the word tchashim and you switch around the letters, you come out with the word mashkis. Mashkis is a destroyer, the destroyer, referring to the Malach HaMavos. That the tachash could be used to knock down the mashkis, knock down the satan, make sure what he wants is not going to be. Since these skins, I don't know what the Yalkut Ruveni meant by that. My assumption is the following. If these skins were used to cover up the Mishkan, then my idea is that it's hiding, keeping in the Kedusha that was inside the Mishkan, covering it and not letting it be lost to the outside. Maybe the pshat is that this is the method Klal Yisrael should go about their business to become great. Be tzanua, in the sense that we don't flaunt our wealth, our riches, and everything we have, right? Instead, keep it inside. And that's the beauty of Klal Yisrael, that we're able to keep it inside, and that's mevatel what the satan is able to do. Even when you do that, when you cover up that Kedusha, the beauty will still be seen on the outside. The beauty can be seen on the outside, even though they can't see the Kedusha, they see something. There's something that's attractive on the outside. Maybe that's the idea of what the Yalkut Ruveni is trying to say, and I found that similar idea in a Kedushas Levi. Kedushas Levi says, sometimes you'll find a badchan. Remember, by the Hasidim, they were always badchanim. They still have them at weddings. They're amazing, these people. They tell jokes, but within the jokes, there's like Yiras Shamayim, Yiras Hashem, and like Musar, and they're nailing people without saying it in such a form where people can get it in. See, on the outside, it doesn't look like anything, but on the inside, it's very, very kaddish. The panimius of his words, the inside of his words is something different. Thus, the Targum says the word sus, as in Simcha. When you give Musar in that fashion, that's what makes people happy. And the Tachash represented that. It was harsh on the outside, but it was taller on the inside. Maybe that's the idea of the same idea of keeping in the Kedusha on the outside, showing a different face. Maybe that's the idea behind it. Now, you can add on a Rabbeinu Ephraim. Rabbeinu Ephraim says all 15 donations that the people gave to the Mishkan represented different methods of Klal Yisrael learning Torah. The Zohar is the ultimate. A guy learning Torah purely L'Shem Shamayim. Just getting rid of everything else and just learning L'Shem Shamayim for no other reason other than that. Then he says, Tchoshim represent people that are Pritzim. What's a Parutz? You're Poritz Geder. That means you break through the fence. Pritzim is without tznius. Nitzchoshim represent the people that hurry to do evil. The word tachash comes from the word chush, which means to run almost. They run to do evil, and they're running to go and do something. Rav Hirsch talks about this as well, right? And surrounded by what? By the Oros Eilim Ma'adamim. The Oros Eilim Ma'adamim, the reddened rams, represents people who have no mitzvos other than the bris milah, the blood of the bris milah. And the Ase Shittim are the people who are shaitim, fools who cannot differentiate between good and bad. Those are the people that are around. He gives another ram, is based on Kashmalim. But either way, this idea, it's still the same type of idea that the Kedushin Slavin and the Al Kuruvani are saying, that it's all about people that are parutz. They don't have tznius. They're the people who lost the ability for Torah to protect them, because they're just doing it as if to break barriers, to do whatever they want with it. Those people are what we shouldn't be like, and the Takash is supposed to be a tikkun for those types of people. It is a really cool idea. If you count from Oros Eilim Adamim, the Oros Tchoshim, you count from the Aleph of Eilim to the Tav of Tchoshim. So you're taking Eilim, Ma'adamim, the Oros, Tav. Take those letters, you get the number 1292. The Rabbeinu Ephraim, again, this is a Rishon, 1300s, says that this number, 1290, is the number that Daniel gives for when Mashiach will come. That, again, Mashiach will come 1,290 years from this certain point. That's based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin. If you count the year that it starts from, and the year that Mashiach is actually there, says Rabbeinu Ephraim, that's 1,292, representing when Mashiach is going to come. If you take the last letters of Tchoshim, take out that Tav, because you already counted it for the number, right? It's Ches Shin Yud Mem, which is the letters of Mashiach. The remez, he says, of Daniel, of when Mashiach is going to come, comes from this parsha. He says it comes from right here, the Mashiach comes from there. And perhaps the same idea. You act with tznius, the Mashiach will come. Maybe that's the idea behind it, and that's the concept, the remez that it's referring to over here. Now, do we know what the Tachash is, for real? So Rabbi Slifkin does speak about it extensively in that book, Sacred Monsters. He does go through it quite a bit. It's unfortunate, I wanted to write it, and he came out with it first. So it's too late now, so now I have to write other things, right? But I don't have it. The truth is, there's no way for us to really know. If we say that it was a creature that only existed at that time, then how are we supposed to know? Right? There's no way for us to know. If you say there's a tummy counterpart, then we got to figure out the tummy counterpart and then figure out what an animal that looks like it could possibly be. A kosher animal that looks like that. If the Takash was existed elsewhere and was brought to the Midbar just for that time, well, then we have an animal. Then we can just find an animal that's going out there. So what are we looking for? We're looking for an animal that has many colors, is kosher, and has a horn in the middle of its forehead. So we're already at a disadvantage, because there is no animal that has one horn in the middle of its forehead. Unicorns in different Greek books, notwithstanding, there is no such creature that exists on this earth. By definition, a unicorn is that one thing. But there are animals that are close. An Indian rhino only has one horn. And although it's not in its forehead, it is by the snout itself. Now, an Indian rhino, you can see on the back, if you look on page 4, does have the little bit, black and white rhinos both have two horns. That wouldn't be it. But an Indian rhino, a Javan rhinoceros, Sumatran rhinos, which are extremely rare, I think the Sumatranos are now extinct, they have one horn and they have that. Marco Polo, when he visited China for the first time, said, "I have found the unicorn and it is way uglier than I thought it should possibly be." I am paraphrasing. He did not use the word way. Okay, but regardless, Marco Polo did say he was the one who assumed that all the stories of the unicorn came from the rhinoceros. Problem with the rhinoceros? Even if it is this type of rhino, rhinos are not kosher. They do not have split hooves, nor do they chew their cud. They don't have either one of those things. Now, that's a problem. There is such a thing as a woolly rhino. On your sheet, you have something called the Elasmotherum. They do have bones of it in the Field Museum here in Chicago. Yes. So they have this little guy over here. It had a strangely weird horn that's in the middle of its snout. Again, I don't know. This was not an actual picture taken with a cell phone. So I don't know if this is actually what it looked like or the coloring. I found it interesting because the coloring does look like it could be many different colors together. So it's possible that that's what it's referring to. Maybe there was a kosher rhino back in the day, which we no longer have. All woolly rhinos have been extinct for 300 years. So they're gone. But it could be there was a woolly rhino back in the day that had kashrus to it that was possibly kosher. If the hyrax is the shafun of the Torah, the rock hyrax is a very close relative of the elephant. It's possible it's connected to this woolly rhino, and that's there. Now, we brought up the giraffe before. I put down over here a Somalian giraffe. The Serengeti giraffes are the ones that you usually see in different zoos everywhere. Right? There are 9 species of giraffes altogether. They are kosher. There's no question they have split hooves and they do chew their cud. Right? According to almost all sheets, it's possibly the zemer out of the 10 animals that are mentioned in Parsha Shmini, the 10 kosher animals that are out there. It does have some great colors. It would just be strange that the Gemara wouldn't describe a giraffe by saying it's got a really long neck. If somebody had to describe a giraffe, you wouldn't say pretty colors. You would say long neck. That's the obvious. Does it have a horn? It does. It has 2 horns on top. And it happens, this is a call by Rabbi Slipkin. The bones of a giraffe, there is a horn in the middle of its forehead. It is a tri-corned creature. Now the Gemara says there's a horn in the middle of its forehead. It doesn't say there aren't other horns. So perhaps that's the idea behind it, but it would be a little bit strange to describe it in such a way.
I think the story of whatever the talus was mm-hmm. would have been related to its skin, not its body form, because people saw the skin. They didn't see it.
Except when the Gemara says it had one horn. That's the problem. When the Gemara says it, and it seems to try to be describing it, you'd think it would say, and it's got a crazy long neck. But you think that way, or it's really, really tall. But who knows? Again, size-wise, it does work. It was huge. So that would make a lot of sense. Now, there is the only known relative of the giraffe. It's called the okapi. Now, the okapi has been bred in Brookfield Zoo for the last 80 years. They still have them. They're still breeding. They had a baby like 2 years ago. It happens to be an unbelievable creature. You can see it on the left-hand side. They did not discover the okapi until the 1900s. They had no idea this animal existed. If you look at it, it's awfully strange looking. It looks like a regular. It's got zebra stripes. It's got black, white, brown, red. It's got yellow a little bit on the underside. So you have all those colors together. Possibly you can come up to 6 colors if you're really trying. I guess if you have Crayola crayons, you have a possibility of getting up to 6 colors within the okapi itself. And it was a creature that should not have been anywhere around at the time. Perhaps you could say that it went to the midbore and then was gunned afterward. It has the same thing of the horn in the middle of its forehead. It definitely does have a small horn covered by fur in the middle of its forehead, even though it does have other tiny little horns on the side. It is an unbelievable creature and big. Not 30 amos big, but it is extremely large, which would work. Then you can get into a bongo and a giant eland, which are also over here, which are striped and look very beautiful creatures, but nonetheless, it's out there. At the end of the day, when we're dealing with such things, none of them look like the worms or the genet. Perhaps the closest to the genet that we were referring to is the giraffe. Maybe that's the closest that we can get. But an actual kosher animal that has split hooves and chews its cud, that has a yellow and black or an orange or blue or some type of coat that goes like that, we don't have one. There is none that science knows of, and we have not seen bones of any that, you know, that have gone through, although obviously skin, you wouldn't be able to find out. You wouldn't be able to figure out what it looks like. Could it be this? Yeah, it could be a woolly rhino that looks awesome with stripes all over its body. It could be it's an okapi. It could be it's referring to a giraffe. Could be it's some other type of animal that we have absolutely no idea about, but is there something that's there? Yeah, let's just wish that caterpillar right there was a massive kosher creature and that we could shecht it and we could eat it all the time. I would be totally into eating that thing, especially with the little furry things coming out from it. I'm totally into that. But that's that for right now. Well, yeah, I'm totally into it. I'm not going to eat the actual worm. I'm just saying, if that was a kosher cow and it was colored that way. And same, by the way, at the end of the day, if you could use some type of, what's it called? Some type of, like science nowadays to make an animal to have those colors, maybe you could make a tachash. It's possible you could make an animal that looks like this. It would be difficult, right? But you'd need a guy who really knows what he's doing. I would love to see one. So I'm waiting for somebody to end up doing that and make their own tachash. But Shkai guys.